622 1320 WILS. Let's get to vaccinations. My next guest has written an extensive article in the New York Times saying that 2017 is the year that the anti-vaccination movement gains ascendancy in the U.S. We're about to face major measles outbreaks across the country. He's one of the country's leading authorities on vaccines. Peter Hotez, a pediatrician at Baylor College of Medicine, director of the Texas Children's Hospital Center for Vaccine Development. Peter, great to have you on WILS.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I want to first get your thoughts on why this is happening. Why is the anti-vaccination movement gaining so much traction right now?
Well, it's never really gone away, and it's different in different parts of the country. But at least in Texas, it seems what's happened is a political action committee has formed and is talking to state legislatures about leaving non-medical exemptions open. So that seems to be the key part here, allowing personal belief exemptions, non-medical exemptions. So any parent who thinks that vaccine causes autism or vaccines are bad for whatever reason can basically file a waiver, which is very easy to do in Texas. Just go on the website, and then your child doesn't have to be vaccinated to go to school.
I believe here in Michigan we have that also. But here's my question, because on the other side, the basic argument is that if you go back to the 70s and 80s, we never had this many vaccines administered so quickly, and they believe that's, of course, their belief is that autism is caused by these vaccinations. Well, what do you say to that argument, first, of the number and the pace of the vaccinations we're giving?
Well, it varies for different people. Some people think vaccines cause autism. Other people think just giving too many vaccines at once somehow causes bad things without really being able to articulate it beyond that. And the point is, Food and Drug Administration, the CDC, looks very closely at combining vaccines. It's very challenging in order to add a vaccine to the current schedule, because you have to show that there's no interference with the immune response and that there's no additional toxicology. So it doesn't make sense, basically. It doesn't hold water. What I always like to point out is if you look at a young child, they have a gastrointestinal tract, they have lungs. Mm-hmm. These are organs that receive different stimuli from the environment and process it. That's a long way of saying a young baby receives hundreds of new antigens every day,
right,
and processes. So adding a few extra antigens from vaccines is not going to make any really make a difference from that standpoint.
Peter Hotez here on WILS. How many more vaccines are we giving today than we did, let's say, in the 70s?
Well, there's a definite increase, but look what's happened. Look how many lives it's saved. Because, for instance, when I was a pediatric house officer in Boston, I was admitting a child every week or so with a terrible form of meningitis leading to death and permanent neurologic damage called Haemophilus influenza type B. And then by the time I finished my residency, the disease had been practically disappeared because we had a vaccine available. So we saved thousands of lives in the United States through that vaccine.
And that's a vaccine that didn't exist, you're saying, several decades ago.
That's a vaccine that didn't exist. So, right. And the same with the pneumococcal vaccine. We've had big drops in meningitis. So it's not kind of frivolous or arbitrary, the fact that we're adding these vaccines.
I want to get to the concerns about the measles, but I want to have you respond. You're an expert in the field, because the other issue they bring up is they say, as parents, they see their children actually changing after a vaccine injection, after a round of these vaccines. They say one day their child behaved one way, they get the vaccines, and suddenly things change very dramatically. I'm sure you've heard that anecdote. What do you say to that?
Well, autism for disclosure, my daughter has autism and other severe mental disabilities, and now she's an adult. And one of the things about autism is it often doesn't become manifest until after 6 months of life or in the first year of life. So, and that's just the way the natural history of autism works. But the genes that control autism are in operation while the baby is still inside the mother. So this has a very strong genetic, or what we call epigenetic basis, just like schizophrenia, which doesn't manifest till oftentimes 20 years of life, even though it's genetic. So I think what happens, I can't speak for everyone, but I think what often happens is, you know, parents see the child, there's a change in the child's behavior, and at 1 year of age, and they start to think, well, what could have accounted for that? What happened to my infant around that time? Mm-hmm. And they tend to remember vaccines because it's dramatic. It's an injection. The child cries, and so sometimes it's a sign to that. But when you actually look at the big epidemiological studies, big studies that compare populations of children who've gotten vaccines, those who don't, and the autism rates are exactly the same. And
Peter, just a couple of minutes left, but I want to talk about your concern about measles outbreaks across the country. First of all, how likely are we going to see these, and what could the repercussions of that really be?
Well, so first of all, vaccine rates are not declining universally across the United States. What we're seeing now are pockets where that parents are opting out of vaccines at very high rates. So here in Texas, it's around the Austin, Texas area, a few other school systems. And we know once vaccination rates go down below 90-95%, they're very vulnerable to measles, because measles is one of the most transmissible agents that we know. It's one of the most highly contagious infectious diseases that we know about. So that's why I singled out measles for the op-ed piece in the New York Times today, was because that's the kind of the canary in the coal mine once the vaccine rates start to go down.
Mm. And those older Americans that have had these vaccine shots decades ago, are they going to be still protected? Or?
Well, we hope so. The big worry about measles is you don't get the measles vaccine in the U.S. till you're on 1 year of age. So you've got anybody with an infant under the age of one is basically very susceptible to measles. And so if you start introducing measles because you have a big group of unvaccinated school-age kids, they're going to bring it home and to their babies. Or, you know, then, as I mentioned in the article, a parent then has to be quite worried about going to a shopping mall or a public library, any kind of public space, because if there's measles around, the baby's going to catch it. Has a very high mortality.
It's Peter Hotez, a pediatrician at Baylor College of Medicine and director of the Texas Children's Hospital Center for Vaccine Development. His piece in the New York Times today outlining his concerns about the anti-vaccination movement and where it could lead us. Peter, great to have you on WILS. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for having me and giving attention to the issue.
630, 1320 WILS. When we come back, we're going to get the latest details in the case of Larry Nassar, former MSU sports doctor, who's now being, he's facing criminal prosecution, dozens of criminal complaints alleging that he sexually abused women during treatment. We'll hear from one of the lawyers involved in the case just how did this happen and how could it have lasted for so long? That's next here on WILS.